From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. For decades, educational researchers have found that when we give teenagers autonomy, freedom, and opportunity to make their own choices, their mental health improves. Chasing these studies, schools across the country have created new courses, new educational pathways, and flexible learning environments. Kids these days have a lot more opportunities to learn trades, to focus on art, or enroll in concurrent college classes. Nationwide, there are twice as many magnet schools today as there were 20 years ago, and about 10 times as many charter schools, many of which similarly offer specialized instruction. At the same time, young people appear to be less likely to engage in high-risk and unhealthy behaviors. They're less likely to smoke, drink, and use drugs. They're less likely to engage in sex, and as a result, less likely to become parents at an early age. It might seem like today's kids should be thriving, but in a lot of cases, they're not. Surveys of teenagers and young adults have repeatedly shown that they feel aimless, empty, unmotivated, and anxious. So, what's missing? Well, John Krieger thinks that young people aren't well connected to themselves. They haven't had good opportunities and guidance for identifying who they are and what they believe. And without a personal grasp of one's own principles, anyone can end up aimless, even in a world ripe with opportunity. Krieger is an educator with 35 years of teaching experience, mostly at American High School in Fremont, California. And that, in full disclosure, is where I first met him when I was a 15-year-old sophomore at that school. That was a long time ago, and I don't remember a lot of the lessons from many of my classes back then, but I remember what he called the Personal Creed Project. The project asks students to reflect on their main influences, their own values, the qualities they wish to develop in themselves, and the difference they want to make in the world. And the latest iterations of these lessons are now available as a social media discussion community, trainings for teachers from the Heritage Institute, and a free course for all learners on the Udemy platform. John Krieger, welcome.
Thank you, Matthew. What a delight to be here.
And it's a delight to hear your voice. John, when I think back on this project, it felt like something that was really well developed. This was back in the mid-1990s when I was a student of yours. It felt like this was something that as a teacher you thought through a lot. But I'm doing the math now and I realize that I actually came along as a student in your life pretty early into your development of the Creed Project, which started in the late 1980s and as I understand it, was prompted by a conversation you had with a student who had recently immigrated from the then Soviet Union. Can you tell me about that conversation?
Wow, goodness. I had not thought of that in a long time. Alex Ribkin was the student's name, actually. He was a Jewish immigrant from the then Soviet Union. We did have a Soviet Union when I met Alex, which would have been 88 or 89. I'm not entirely sure. But we were talking at lunch one day, and I remember just kind of joking around a little bit. I speak a little Russian, and I had studied in Russia for a semester back in my college days. So I was just joking about something with Alex. And Alex said, turned to me and he said, Mr. Krieger, that would not be in line with my creed.
And this kid was 14, 15 years old?
He was probably 15.
And he said it wouldn't be in line with his creed.
And the reaction in my brain when he said the word creed, I remember my brain feeling like the word creed was being branded into the actual, you know, flesh of my brain, if that's an appropriate way to look at it. And that very thought that you just expressed, Matthew, that a 15-year-old had used this word in my presence, it sort of set in motion something that was already, I think, going on with me and in me. I don't recall the specifics of how the project developed. I remember, I think probably the best way to say it, kind of popped in to my mind. And I drafted it out, and I showed it to our principal, the founding principal of the school, Joe Tranchina. And I just wanted to just clear it. I had no idea, you know, whether this was safe, advisable, you know, how parents would respond to that kind of personal reflection, teacher asking students to reflect on their lives to that degree. And Joe fired it back to me with just pay attention to parent response. And he said, gave me a green light. In those years, it was possible to innovate and kind of follow your intuition.
But it sounds like you weren't thinking about filling a huge educational gap back then. You were just trying to give students something interesting to write about and meaningful to think about.
The idea that we should have student-centered learning, and that their development was important, that we have a diversity of experiences, diversity of readings for them in the English classes. Our school was quite experimental in lots of ways. So there was a fair amount of freedom for me then to just go with my gut, I think is a fair way to put it. But my own high school experience, I had graduated in 1969 from a high school in the Bay Area, which had a great reputation for sending people to elite schools, etc.
You've written that you had no interest in that when you were a sophomore in high school.
I had no interest in that at any point in high school. I was very disgruntled. I couldn't have articulated why, I don't think, back then. But I look back and I say, I graduated from high school with little or no idea who I was, what kind of life I wanted to live, what kind of contribution I wanted to make, what I valued. I had some vague notions here in the middle of the Vietnam War protests and really increasingly widespread drug abuse of the late 60s. It was a very confusing time to come of age, and school did little or nothing to help with any of that for me.
And you wanted to make sure that students had a better foot up on understanding who they were during, the 1980s and 1990s, which were another period of significant change and global strife and kinds of social mobility and social change that could feel unmooring for students.
So I think I just wanted, and I think you've said something along those lines, that I didn't want young people to graduate from high school as clueless as I felt.
And so you came up with this project over the years through several iterations that, it's funny, Walt Whitman wrote in the 1850s what could have been the learning objective of this whole thing. He wrote this in the preface to Leaves of Grass. And I do dearly love this. He wrote, "Re-examine all you've been told in school or church or in any book and dismiss whatever insults your own soul." And I don't remember if that was, on the syllabus of your sophomore English class, but that's a real good description of what you were trying, the experience that you were trying to give your students in this project, yes?
I've used it in some of my own writings now. It's really, you couldn't have picked a more apt quote. Anything that challenges your soul, if it challenges your soul, if it can help you build your soul, then all the better. But if it tries to, I forget the actual wording, but if it dampens or, imprisons your soul, then it's time to let go of it.
Let's talk about the fundamentals of this experience for students. At its most basic, this can probably be described as a journey of reflection into each student's values, and then how those values play out in their lives and how they would like those values to play out as they move forward. Is that a succinct way of saying it?
There's one component that we should add into it, and I think that might distinguish this journey of reflection from others in that it guides students through a series of reflections on their own life experience. And the majority of the time in the Personal Creed Project for students to take a comprehensive look at the various influences that have shaped them. But you add in a series of reflections on their own life experience to discover what they value.
That part has got to be scary for young teenagers a lot of time, to think that they have come to be who they are as a result of a lot of influences that they did not have any control over. That's something that sort of at that age you're probably starting to reflect on, but when you think about it, maybe it's not a very palatable thought in a lot of ways. How do you make it comfortable for students, or at least uncomfortable in a way that doesn't scare them out of the classroom or get them complaining to their parents?
That's a really good question. And I think that there's a couple of answers. One is that if you're going to introduce this kind of project entailing this kind of reflection to young people, the environment has to be a trusting one. So you kind of have to be the kind of teacher who's, or learn to be the kind of teacher who puts a fair amount of energy into making the environment in the classroom, the community, one where people feel safe. And over the years, I learned a lot about how to do that from other teachers. Some of it, I think it kind of came naturally to me. So that's one thing, is creating a safe environment in the classroom. And there's lots to that. Another one is to introduce the reflections very gradually, and to give examples. And it is good when you give examples from your own life. I can say more about that if you like. But those are two things: safe environment and introduce it gradually.
At some point, you started seeing these reflections and the year-end results of this process. And you realize that something's happening. These students are getting something that they weren't getting otherwise. They were getting to know themselves in a different way. Was there an aha moment for you when that came about? Was there a particular student story where you went, oh, this is really, really important right now?
When I was in graduate school for 2 years, and I kept thinking about this project, how meaning seemed to be dripping from the walls when students were, particularly when they were presenting. Now, that's something we haven't discussed yet, but there are two parts of the project. The first is these reflections and the conversations around them that I was just trying to describe a little bit. But when the project really comes home and becomes extraordinary is when it turns into a social experience. Every student stands in front of the room and comes up with four elements. These are the influences, the main influences, you know, three, four, or at the most five main influences in my life that have shaped me. And you explain what those are, and you explain how they shaped you. Second, these are the values that this life experience has influenced me to embrace. These are the values that my life experiences have taught me and that I choose to inboard at this point in my life. The third part is, these, if I'm going to live for these values, compassion, you know, courage, justice, I'm going to need certain qualities. In order to support these values, I'm going to need a lot of patience, let's say. I'm going to need some forgiveness too. So you have to think about qualities you'll need in order to live by those values that you've chosen. And the last thing is, this is the difference I'd like to make in others' lives by living these values. So each student stands up in some creative way, and there's lots of different, in the early days it was posters, but sometimes kids would create a poem, sing a song that they'd written, dance. I had a martial arts presentation once, narrowly missed my chin with a foot. lots of creativity came into those presentations, and now the digital, they make films, and during the distance learning years, I captured Zoom presentations that were really astonishingly moving. Those presentations are really, that's the best way to kind of get what this experience is all about. What they said over and over again and continue to say is that as a result of the experience of reflecting on their life experience, coming up with values that they consider and choose for the time being, and then thinking about the difference they want to make in the world, they end with saying, I know who I am now. I have a better idea than I've ever had about who I am.
Let me ask this. The word creed has religious origins. It's often tied to Christianity. By the 1700s, its use had spread to other faiths. And then by the 1900s, and certainly by the time you were teaching, it was sort of broadly used for any set of deeply held beliefs. But I'm reflecting here on its religious origins because teenagers and young adults today are substantially less likely to rate religion as a priority in their lives. They're less likely to believe in a God or scriptures with absolute certainty. They're less likely to attend regular religious services. These are all places and experiences that for a long time for young people provided a framework for creed. And so my hypothesis here is that, you know, we really haven't done a good job as a society of replacing these faith-based structures with other structures that help people generate their own understanding of why they are who they are and what they believe. That's the piece that you're trying to fill in, yeah?
Well, I think some of it's has to do with my personal journey. I come from a family with one parent from a Jewish background, another parent from a Christian background, neither of them believers in religion at all. In fact, they were both, I guess you could call them proud atheists. And I grew up as kind of a misfit in the family and the culture that I come from. There was nothing in my experience of it that addressed spiritual questions, but I had them. And I had them quite young, but there was no way to articulate them. There was nobody to talk to. So part of my journey entailed exploring religion, but not organized religion. I was just trying to learn, and I did. I learned. And then I came across another book called the Urantia Book, U-R-A-N-T-I-A. And that was a natural next step to help me understand what the universe might be all about and how God might factor in and the history of our world with all of our different religions. And it provided me kind of an umbrella almost, I think that's a good image. And so I began to be able to perceive others' religions as fitting into this big umbrella. And then I later explored my Jewish part. And I discovered that there's a lot of my own identity comes out of the Jewish tradition. But I came to teaching with my on my own journey in that regard. And where I was that that spirituality is something that's an internal, but can be shared. And sometimes traditions can help and sometimes not so much. But I drew a line between sharing and preaching, right? We're not here to preach. We're sharing about our own development. So there is a connection between, you know, a person's developing sense of who they are spiritually, and if they choose to go into that, I always hoped, and I still do, that the Creed Projects helps people develop themselves in a larger way than just academically. And to be honest, I've been inspired by many of my students on the spiritual level.
You did this with your students for a long time in your own classroom. Now you're trying to make it accessible for others. You're sort of moving from practicing to proselytizing. How's that going for you?
Yeah, I've tried. I have gone to conferences, the National English Teachers Convention, the state English teacher, the local one at Asilomar. I've been pretty much of a regular. And I've done my best. I've made allies. Teachers and professors in different places are running the project. I have managed to. I did write a book on the Personal Creed Project. I received an award from the National Council of Teachers of English and wrote numbers of articles in professional journals. But I'm still kind of on the fringe. Not I'm on the fringe, but the idea of the Personal Creed Project is on the fringe.
It's a different set of skills to be an evangelist than to be a teacher.
And the funniest thing is, when my wife and I met and fell in love and decided to get married, I told her, this was back before I was a teacher, I said, you know, I think I have some kind of mission in life. And I'm going to be some kind of evangelist, but I don't know exactly what that looks like at this point. Are you okay with that? And so I think this has been kind of the calling.
When you have humbling experiences like that, where you feel like you have something to share, that maybe you're not being as effective at sharing it as you wish to be, where does your own personal creed come into that? What parts of your professed values do you reflect on? I mean, honestly, to keep you sane in times like that.
One of the things I'm doing nowadays is writing about individual students and what I've learned from them. And one of the ones I could write about is a guy named Mike Fabo. Mike graduated in, I want to say, 2000. And he was a not very happy camper. And, you know, kind of came in tardy sometimes. And I have to take him aside and speak with him a little bit. And one day, in the middle of the Creed reflections, he raised his hand. He said, Mr. Krieger, you're making us do all these reflections, this personal creed thing. What's your creed? And I just got slapped in the forehead because I hadn't really, this was right after I came back from grad school, actually the same semester. And I hadn't really thought, wow, I should deliver my presentation too, shouldn't I?
That kid called your bluff.
He called me out. And I remember sitting at the corner of my teacher's desk and putting my knee, wrapping my hands around my knee and leaning back and coming out with absolute BS. And that night I went home and I said, that's never going to happen again. I'm going to deliver my own personal creed every year from now on. And so I started doing that. And that made the project even more meaningful to me because I didn't want to deliver them, you know, something I repeat every year the same way. So I updated it most every year. Sometimes it'd be, okay, this is still pretty relevant. But recently, the versions of the personal creed, my personal creed, at the top of the my list of values is bringing more life into learning.
That's John Krieger. He is an educator and the founder of the Personal Creed Project, which you can learn about at personalcreed.com. John, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. It was a great delight to speak with you and hear your voice again.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio. And if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us, then you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University and from listeners like you. You can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.